Radha Madhava Kunja Vihare. Gopi Jana Balabha Gravadir Hari. Gopi Jana Balabha Gravadir Hari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Raja Gajara Sotir Siddha Shri Shimnas Vangres A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai ISKCON Founder Charya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai Gaura Premananda. All glories to assembled devotees. All glories to assembled devotees. All glories to assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Guranga. Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Pasabhyaya Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Dhaname Namaste Sarasa. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 18, Text 10. Okay. Sri Bhagavan Vacha Satyam Vayam Bho Vanagochara Mriga Yasmad Vidhan Mrigaye Grama Simhan Namrichu Pashai Prati Muktasya Vira Vikantanam Tava Grinantya Badra Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Satyam Vayam Bho Vanagochara Mriga Yishmad Vidhan Mrigaye Grama Singhan Namrichu Pashai Pratimuktasya Vira Vikantanam Tava Grinantya Badra Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Satyam Vayam Bho Vanagochara Mriga Yushmad Vidhan Mrigaye Grama Singhan Namrichu Pashaye Prati Muktasya Vira Vikantanam Tava Grinantya Badra
Sri Bhagavan Vacha
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Vaishnavis. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Satyam, indeed, Vayam, we, Bo, O, Vanagochara, dwelling in the forest, Mriga, creatures, Yashmat Vidhan, like you, Mrigaye, I am searching to kill Gramasimhan, dogs, not Mrityupashai, by the bonds of death, Pratimuktasya, of one who is bound, Vira, the heroes, Vikantanam. Lustok, Tava, your, Grananti, take notice of, Abhadra, O mischievous one. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The Personality of Godhead said, indeed, we are creatures of the jungle, and we are searching after hunting dogs like you. One who is freed from the entanglement of death has no fear from the loose talk in which you are indulging, for you are bound up by the laws of death. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Demons and atheistic persons can go on insulting the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but they forget that they are subjected to the laws of birth and death. They think that simply by decrying the existence of the Supreme Lord, or defying his stringent laws of nature, one can be freed from the clutches of birth and death. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that simply by understanding the transcendental nature of God, one can go back home, back to Godhead. But demons and atheistic persons do not try to understand the nature of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, they remain in entanglement of birth and death. Om Gyan Tamrandasya Ganajana Salakaya Chaksaranamitamina Tasma Shri Gurvena Maha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutales Swamiyam Satakam Hare Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Vandu Jagapake Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurange Radhe Vrindavaneshvri Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Puri Vanchakopatrubhishcha Kripasindubhyebhichcha Patitano Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. At the end of the purport on yesterday's verse, text 9, Srila Prabhupada indicated the double meanings that are here in many of the expressions of both Hiranyaksha and in the Supreme Lord as Lord Varaha's reply. And in tomorrow's verse, he explains some of the double meanings of that verse. But today he doesn't, for some reason. So we're going to go with the direct meaning that Prabhupada talks about in the purport as far as our discussion today. But I also just wanted to read to you what the other meanings are from Jiva Goswami's and Srila Jivishnana Chakravarti Thakura's purports on this verse. Jiva Goswami's commentary says, "The Lord's words are filled with joking in reference to the present identity of his associate, but carrying another real meaning as well. Vanagotra means a person who is the residence of the devotee. Being merciful, I searched after the best people in the material world, Gramasinghan, such as you. I seek you out to liberate you. Why are you so merciful to us unsubmissive people?" That would be what Varaha would be asking. He said, "Heroes do not react to the words of such people." And Vishwanath says, "The other meaning is as follows. We are seen by the devotees who have given up material enjoyment, Vanagotra. Mercifully, I search out those who are most prominently attached to the material enjoyment, Gramasimhan, to offer them a place with me. But why do you give mercy to proud, sinful persons? Heroes like me are generous and do not feel the faults in your boasting words. What is your position? You become completely freed from the ropes of death, since one who receives my mercy is not subject to death, O person from whom no inauspiciousness arises, Abhadra." So, as we've discussed before a few times in this class, there are two meanings to many of these verses, because, of course, these are not ordinary demons that Krishna is fighting. And, of course, Hiranyaksha being Jaya, I'm assuming? Jaya or Vijaya? Jaya. I think it's Jaya. Being Jaya, an eternal associate of Krishna, obviously there is a very special relationship. So as been pointed out before, there is a rasa in the mood of anger here, where Hiranyaksha, although he's displaying this great anger as an envious demon, he's actually doing this for the enjoyment of the Lord, so that he can enjoy a pastime of fighting, as well as saving the earth planet and protecting his devotees. So at any rate, going really with the direct meaning here today, because that's what Srila Prabhupada has done, he's discussed in the purport that there are two different types of living entities discussed in the verse and purport, and there are two different results based upon their consciousness and activities. The first are the materialists and atheists who deny the existence of God. And what is the result? Prabhupada says they remain in the entanglement of birth and death. And the second are the devotees who understand the nature of God. And the result? Prabhupada says one can go back home, back to Godhead. And Srila Prabhupada refers to the Bhagavad Gita verse to substantiate this point. There's a couple different ones could apply, but most likely he's referring to Bhagavad Gita 4:9. "One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna." Unfortunately, most living entities in this material world remain separate from God, and they stay in this material world for countless lifetimes. Of course, one can say that eventually everyone becomes liberated. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said this, but for the most part, we can see people rotating throughout the cycle of birth and death throughout many, many lifetimes. And they are here, why? Because of the free will the jiva exercised at some point. And coming to this material world, they are bewildered by the influence of material energy. They forget Krishna, they deny his existence, they even blaspheme the Lord, as we see here. Bhagavatam 8.5.30 says, "No one can overcome the Supreme Personality of God. It's illusory energy, maya, which is so strong that it bewilders everyone, making one lose the sense to understand the aim of life." And Prabhupada says in the purport, he gives him an opportunity to be happy within this material world, but that is maya. In other words, it's a dream that is never to be fulfilled, Prabhupada says. So we all, in the material world, try over and over again for some type of enjoyment, thinking that this is a place that we can actually be happy, but that dream is never to be fulfilled. So bewildered by maya, people do not live a life in preparation for death. Rather, they simply become subjected to the harsh laws of nature. They deny God's existence, and they think they are not subject to his laws. And the purport Srila Prabhupada said, they think that simply by decrying the existence of the Supreme Lord or defying his stringent laws of nature, one could be freed from the clutches of birth and death. Now, this sounds like it doesn't make any sense, but that's exactly the way many people think, isn't it? In other words, I deny God, so therefore nothing applies to me. I can do what I want. There will be no reaction. There'll be, you know, I can more or less do what I want within this material world. And they're in this sense of illusion going along in this way, but always in the clutches of birth and death. So we see in here in Yaksha an example of extreme envy and aversion to the Lord, at least in this role that he's playing, is here in Yaksha, the material world. And we know that that envy is the root cause of coming to this material world and leaving Krishna. So we see the result of that envy, of how it plays out, how it manifests when one comes into this material energy. Similarly, the living entity's conditional life of material existence is due to his desire to lord it over material nature, due to his envy of the Supreme Lord. This is Srila Prabhupada's purport from Srimad Bhagavatam 3.27.23. Thus his main diseases, there's two diseases Prabhupada mentions. He wants to be one with the Supreme Lord, or he wants to become the Lord of material nature. So those two diseases that we have when we come into this material world. First, to want to become the Lord, become one with the Lord or equal to the Lord. Of course, that's the Mayavadis. You know, I'll simply become God. I am the Lord now. You know, once I give up this illusion that I'm this body, then I become God. But if one can't really see that they are God, at least one may try to lord it over material nature. This is the gross materialist. In other words, I will enjoy all of Krishna's energy. I will enjoy Krishna's property. You know, I am the one who everything centers around. It's all about me. Now, this envy is our original impetus for coming into this material world. And sometimes that seems difficult to understand, I think, particularly for devotees. Because sometimes we think, well, we often don't feel, well, I'm not really that envious of Krishna. Well, most of you aren't because you're devotees. You're surrendering to Krishna. And therefore, we are in the process of giving up that envy. It may not be completely gone, but we are certainly attempting to give up envy, attempting to surrender to Krishna, to the spiritual master, and thus go back home, back to Godhead. So we may not feel that we are particularly envious, but our original envy is of Krishna. We wish to control, we wanted to enjoy like Krishna, thus we left the spiritual world. That's almost the proof, isn't it? All right, if we were never envious, why are you here in the material world? Well, you know, here we are. There is a reason for that. Now, that original envy of Krishna then expands Who are we envious of next? Devotees and all other living entities, really, right? So we start where, you know, we may be envious of Krishna, but then we become envious of everyone. That original envy expands to all living entities. So we may not see that direct envy, but envy of others is an indirect envy of Krishna. Because we also want what they have and what they possess. We want to be as better than they are. So that takes two forms. We may want to have what others possess. We wish we had their money or their whatever it might be, or their good looks or their accomplishments, or whatever. Or we may, realizing that we're not going to really have that, we may try to diminish their abilities or accomplishments. You ever see that? I see that myself. I see that in devotees sometimes. In other words, yeah, he's a great kirtan leader, but, you know, it's always the but, you know, and something I can find fault with. You know, there's some problem with him or some character or, you know, whatever it might be. Yeah, you know, yeah, he probably gives classes better than I do, but, you know, I mean, so that's envy. And rather than just glorifying a devotee for what they can do, how nicely they're serving Krishna, we try to diminish their ability and thus raise our own standing. Well, so that's natural. That's the material world. That's what we do here. But we are learning to not do that. The change of heart that comes about from Krishna consciousness is to give up envy, to surrender to Krishna, to appreciate the devotees, to praise the devotees, to take an attitude of humility. That's not always so easy. And that's why we're here in this material world a long time, and why even as devotees, sometimes it seems like it's a lot of work to really become purified and to become free from all of these anartas that we have coming into these lifetimes after lifetime in the material world. So, of course, the atheists that Prabhupada is talking about here, they show the most extreme envy for Krishna. They deny his existence. All right, maybe I can't be God, I can't have all your power, but you don't even exist anyway, right? There isn't any God. So I'm actually equal to God, because if there isn't any God, whatever I am is superior. And in fact, the impersonal conception, or I should say specifically the Mayavadi conception, is quite demeaning and belittling of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because if Krishna has no qualities, right, there's no variety, there's no relationship, it's just all one spiritual energy. Hey, but I've got qualities. So in other words, I'm actually better. It's a very puffed up, arrogant attitude towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay. So, and of course, many of our scientists today—not just scientists, but everyone in all walks of life—are openly envious of God. Now it's almost. If you're an intellectual, you know, it's almost considered to be de rigueur that you you have some skepticism about such old-fashioned notions of religion. There's a very famous scientist named Richard Dawkins, and he had the arrogance to write a book with the title The God Delusion. You know, it's isn't that arrogant when you think about it? Yeah, God is just a delusion, you know. All you common people who are worshiping God, what do you know? You know, and of course Karl Marx. What was his famous comment about religion? That it was the opiate of the masses. In other words, we keep the masses quiet and under control. You give them religion, so in other words, they're not going to cause any trouble. That was his attitude towards it. You know, and we had of course the famous statement of Nietzsche that God is dead. Do you ever see that cartoon where? Was written on the wall, God is dead, Nietzsche, and underneath it said, Nietzsche is dead, God. So God outlasted Nietzsche. Nietzsche's no longer with us. Yeah. Okay, so the nature of material attachment, we desire what we don't have, and we call that hankering and lamenting, or desire and lamentation. This is described by Bhagavad Gita 12:17, the shochati and akankshati. One who is very dear to Krishna neither laments nor desires. And again in 1854, it says, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma and shochati and akankshati. One who is thus transcendently situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments or desires to have anything. So we have the converse to Nishoshati and Nakanakshati of hankering, lamenting. The converse of that is one realizes Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. One becomes happy. But if we don't have the realization, we hanker for what we don't have and lament for what is lost, right? There's always something that we think that we need, the latest technology or the latest iPhone or something. You ever see, you know, you get, if you ever, if you're on the internet at all, you can get bombarded by ads, right? So everybody's trying to tell you, you really need this new gadget. So sometimes, you know, we all get caught by this. I think, oh, well, you know, maybe I do need the latest version of iPhone. Then I stop and think, what's wrong with what I have? Well, nothing. What is it that it doesn't do that you really have to have it do? Well, nothing really. So what basically materialistic culture creates desires that we didn't even know we had. You know, you may not even have the desire, but our materialistic society will implant that desire within you. So you think, oh, I have to have that too. Right? I'm always hankering. And if I don't get what I want, then I'm lamenting. And what does hankering and lamenting do? It prevents us from being in the present, right? Hankering is about being in the future, and lamenting is about being in the past. Where is Krishna consciousness? It's in the present, right? Spiritual life is in the present. Not hankering, not lamenting, but being here, being now in our relationship with Krishna. That's sort of that eternal now. That sounds kind of a be here, you know, kind of hippie-ish. But anyway, you know what I'm saying here. It is. Our present state should be our relationship with Krishna. Okay? So, this brings us also to the idea of time. We're talking about past, present, and future. Time is a very important principle. The Bhagavad Gita, in the introduction, Prabhupada describes the five topics or subject matters of Bhagavad Gita, right? There's Ishvara, Supreme Lord, Prakriti, material nature, Jiva, the living entity, Kala, time, and Karma, activity. So Kala, time is one of the five main topics that's been described. So how is time usually described? It's usually described as that element that wears things down. They cause degradation, right? 11:32, time I am, the great destroyer of the worlds, and I have come to destroy all people. Krishna says this. Krishna says time is the energy that he uses to bring about destruction in this material world, right? And we all see this. Even we see it on the, obviously on the global scale, on the cosmic scale. We also see it individually. As time passes, what happens? Well, we all know what happens. We, you know, this process is, what are the six symptoms of life, you know, beginning with birth. You know, you maintain some time, you have byproduct. Then what does it end up with? Dwindling and death. Yeah, I'm experiencing a dwindling process right now. That's kind of the stage I'm at. You know, yeah, that's time. It's the time factor. It's taking down everything materially. So the relationship with Krishna is very immediate. It's what we're experiencing in our relationship with God. But the spiritual world, it says that time is conspicuous by its absence. Now, what does that mean? It means the spiritual world is devoid of a material conception of time. Because obviously we have remembrance of something from the past. You know, we might remember Krishna, Smaranam, and we might plan our future service, think this is what I'm going to do. We're going to do this thing. We're going to, you know, do something more to serve Krishna tomorrow or next year or whatever. So we do work within time. You say, well, that's in the material world. What about in the spiritual world? Is there any sense of time?
Yes and no.
Very good. That's the right answer. Yes and no. There's no material time, but there is spiritual time. Krishna's activities are seen at different times of the day, right? It's time to go out and herd the cows. It's time to come in the evening. It's time to go out at night under the full moon and have the rasa dance. It's time, you know, and we even see the passage of time. Krishna's, he starts out, Kumara, Puganda, Kishore, different stages of life, Navayovana. Of course, he stops at 16, no more after that for Krishna. But now we can't do that. Only Krishna can do that. But and Krishna's devotees, actually. It's described that the residents of Vrindavan didn't really experience old age either, right? And they all kind of remained the same. They were at a certain age, and when Krishna lived to, I shouldn't say live, but Krishna appeared in this world for, 125 years? Is that right? 125 years. Now, were the residents of Vrindavan, did they change? They look like really old people? No, they remain the same. Okay. So that's spiritual, the spiritual nature. So time is there for the purpose of enjoying pastimes and increasing prema. And they bring us to the activities of the present, really, because Krishna consciousness, as I said, is in the present. Brahmasamhita 5.56 says, I worship Goloka, pure and uncontaminated, where extensive oceans of milk flow from cows, where not even a moment of time passes, which only a few rare devotees wandering on this earth have realized. Now, there's a nice commentary by Jiva Goswami. It's actually in Krishna Sandarbha, verse 172, where he explains this principle of how this works in the spiritual world. Jiva Goswami Maharaj says, in that place, there is light, jyoti, in the form of a sun, which is indestructible at the time of pralaya. Of course, pralaya is the final cosmic devastation. For enhancing the sweetness of human pastimes, that's the purpose, to enhance the sweetness of the pastimes. That light is relished by the people there, being full of knowledge and bliss. That's spiritual energy, right? Knowledge and bliss. It is the highest truth, not material. The sun and the moon exist there in remarkable forms. Gautamiya Tantra describes Vrindavan as Samanodita Chandrakam. There are suns and moons rising with the same forms continually. Night after night, the moon is always full, right? You hear about the full moon night of the Sharat season, right, and the Rasa day. But that goes on for not just one night, for many nights, for a few months. Same full moon is coming up. So time doesn't pass because, Jiva Goswami says, time does not pass because it's unnoticed due to absorption in rasa. In other words, there's not really a sense of, oh, so many years are going by, and it's like I'm getting old. There's not that sense because when it's totally absorbed in rasa, although there's an orderliness. In fact, then, finally, the last line here, Jiva Goswami says, if there was actually no perception of previous and later, the nature of the pastimes full of actions would be lost, right? I mean, if it was all just sort of like one blur of, we're just all in bliss right now and everything is all merging together. And we can't even really comprehend it because it doesn't exactly make sense. In other words, there has to be some sort of progression of things happening in a certain sequence, for us to have the full variety of relationships. In other words, everything that's in the material world is there in its pure form in the spiritual world. So the pure sense of time, which does not have the destructive feature of material time, is there in the spiritual world to simply order the wonderful, pleasing, rasas, relationships, and activities that go on in the spiritual world. Okay? So, in contrast, Srila Prabhupada talks about the devotee who does not lament or desire in a purport to Bhagavad Gita 18.54. The devotee in Krishna consciousness has nothing for which to lament or desire. Since God is full, a living entity who is engaged in God's service in Krishna consciousness becomes also full in himself. He's just like a river cleansed of all dirty water. Because a pure devotee has no thought other than Krishna, he is naturally always joyful. He does not lament for any material loss or aspire for gain. because he is in full in service to the Lord. No desire for material enjoyment, because he knows that every living entity is a fragmental part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, and therefore eternally a servant. He does not see in the material world someone is higher and someone is lower. Higher and lower positions are ephemeral, and a devotee has nothing to do with ephemeral appearances or disappearances. For him, a stone and gold are of equal value. This is the Brahma-Bhuta stage, and this stage is attained very easily by the pure devotees. So it's a very wonderful purport. It explains both the cause and the result of envy. The cause and result of loss of envy for the devotees. The result, the Brahma-Bhuta stage, prasanatma, one is fully joyful. Now, of course, if we get into it more deeply, we can say this Brahma-Bhuta stage is not really even the highest stage, because it doesn't really express the full growth of prema to its greatest extent. One could even be in the Brahma-Bhuta stage and be more in like Shantaras even, I think. But at any rate, but still, it's a very, very high stage. And there's the cause that there's no envy. Prabhupada says this comes about because of spiritual knowledge, satisfaction of bhakti, and purification of the heart. So we must have this knowledge, as Prabhupada says, that we are a fragmental part and parcel of Krishna, his eternal servant. Knowing Krishna creates appreciation and worship, which is the opposite of envy. The devotee is filled with love and relationship with Krishna. Prabhupada says, full in service to the Lord and naturally always joyful. And the satisfaction of devotional service purifies our hearts. And thus, the devotee goes from a position of envy to a position of love of Krishna. And that is our purpose in this world, to be able to give up these negative aversions to the Lord and take up our real spiritual position as loving servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay. That's it. Thank you very much. Are there questions, comments? Prangavan.
I remember in one book named Bhakta Loka by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he said to go back home, back to Godhead, every living entity has a one prescription and one prohibition. Prescription is must do daily sadhana. Prohibition is give up envy. So I was collecting different reference, and I remember one conversation Prabhupada had with Siddha Swarup Prabhu in Hawaii. So Prabhupada says, they are having conversation. Tamal Geshe Maharaj was there also. And in the conversation he said, so when someone has something, he has a rightful ownership, but I don't allow it to, that is envy. Prabhupada said, yes. So, but actually it is sanctioned by Krishna, so we are actually envy to Krishna. Prabhupada said, you got it. Mm-hmm. So envious to amongst each other is actually ultimately envy to Krishna.
Ultimately it's envy of Krishna.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But in another lecture, Prabhupada said, people are envious to cow. And I was thinking, how we are envious to cow? I remember thinking about cows.
Cows?
Yeah.
Cows.
Yeah. But in another lecture, Prabhupada says, everybody has a right to live. But some people think cow has no right to live. So I put these two together. Oh, I see. So then I was applying, maybe you can correct me. In the temple, everybody has a right to express their devotional sentiment to Krishna. But in my mind, if I don't like somebody to grow, I'm envy to that mm-hmm. person. Yeah. I have to be careful.
Yeah, nice points. Thank you. Anyone, somebody say? Oh, let's go over here and then we'll come back over here. Over to... ladies, groups.
Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you for your very nice class. Prabhu, where does envy come from? We're in the spiritual world. I understand that, you know, Krishna has all qualities and, you know, we come from. But envy, I mean, it just seems so foreign. If you're in the spiritual world, you're properly situated, you're serving. Well, how does envy come that we want, I mean?
I think the spiritual equivalent is sometimes you see jealousy.
See what?
Jealousy, oh. You see sometimes between like the gopis mm-hmm. and, right? You know, it can be there, you know, that, you know, sometimes Radharani will get angry with Krishna, saying, why were you with this gopi? Why were you with Chandravali, you know? And I mean, it's not envy, but it's sort of a transcendental jealousy. And again, the purpose is to enhance the relationships. Krishna likes a little drama, you know? Krishna, right? Krishna likes things to, he likes a little spice in the relationship, you know, make things a little bit interesting, you know, and have fun. Krishna's a great enjoyer of fun and, you know, all sorts of things. So sometimes we see things that may resemble a little bit like that, but they're actually pure in their basis.
Yeah, but our envy is so deadly that it separates us from Krishna.
Yeah.
And then we have to work all this thing to get rid of it. It seems like if you're so properly situated in spiritual, it seems such like a foreign thing to come, you know. You might be a little envious of this gopi, or, like you said, or serving Krishna. But because they want to serve Krishna, it's not they want to be separated from Krishna. But our thing is we wanted to take the position of Krishna.
Yeah.
Which is
yeah.
like...
It's somehow or another... It was there within our hearts. And it's really part of free will, isn't it? When you think about it, the living entity must have free will. Why? Mm-hmm. Because otherwise there's not true love, right? If we don't have the choice to love Krishna or not love Krishna, it's not really love. Prabhupada said that, I can't take a gun to you and say, you must love me. No, love is voluntarily. So because it's voluntary, Krishna also... You can't just be voluntary, but there's no real choice. In other words, there has to be a choice. And so, unfortunately, we all took the wrong choice. Bad choices. Okay. Thanks, Trivik Ram.
Hari Bol. Nice. So Srila Prabhupada highlighted the atheists there. So when I went, after Mangala Arati, I went home, checked my computer, there was a question, can the atheists go to hell? And then I said, certainly. They're the most sorry and unfortunate people on this earth. And 7 billion people can find God within the pages of the scriptures, but they cannot. Their karma would be imprinted upon their subtle body and their death. They go for karmic trial, and then they go to hell for billions of years. They come back to earth, and then if they don't change, it repeats itself.
Okay. Let's get...
Yeah, you mentioned Richard Dawkins. It reminded me of an interview Ben Stein did, a documentary he was making. At the end of it, he had an interview with Richard Dawkins. He said, so you don't believe in God? He said, no, of course not. He said, well, Christian God? No. Hindu God? No. Muslim God? No God? And Richard Dawkins was getting visibly, you know, annoyed. He said, well, what are you going to do, you know, when you give up this body and you go back and God says, look, I gave you Richard. I gave you this, you know, $1 million book contract. I gave you this. I gave you that. Why are you telling people I don't exist? And so Richard Dawkins said, if God exists, he's gone to great lengths to hide himself, which is straight out of Prabhupada's books. If you want to forget God, then Krishna will give you the intelligence to not see him and then forget himself. It was just classic quote.
Yeah.
That's
that was really interesting. Yes, and so obviously if you want to forget God, then Krishna actually gives you all the arguments, right? Yeah. Subscribe. Krishna gives the arguments to the atheists so that they can convince themselves and others that there is no God, right? It's DTD Mooney. Because
I've dealt with Mr. Richard, Dr. Dawkins' stuff. But to say you don't believe in God is also a belief. Because
yes.
I've dealt with these people. Are you a believer? Are you not a believer? It's all belief on that platform, you know?
So
I believe... I believe that someone can believe there is no God. Yes, I do believe that they can believe there's no God.
Right. Now, that is a point I probably would make it. Everyone believes in something. Everyone has faith in something, right? We couldn't exist without faith. We have faith that the sun's going to come up in the morning and, you know, right, when life goes on. And, you know, we without that faith, we couldn't even exist. So it's where you, it's really a question of where do you put your faith?
I remember reading Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's speech on Brahman and Vaishnavism.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
In that one section, I recall many years back I read that when Jiva came, living entity came to this world, the first cause was apathy to devotional service, caused them impersonalism, infection of impersonalism. I don't want to serve God. So then personality disappear. Then it caused them loneliness. Then caused them depression. And then found out that God controls everything. That's where the envy actually started, material envy. So it makes sense that how gradually progressed. And to get out of the depression or loneliness, only cure is, there is a verse, 10th canto, 51 chapter, about Muchukunda's conversation with the Lord. He said, Varan vinito rajar se sarvan kaman dadamite mam prasanna janakaschit na arhati sochitam. If you please me one time at least, then you will not have a fear of future, illusion of present, or lamentation of past. Until that, loneliness and depression will stay with every soul.
Until one pleases God at least once.
Yes, at least once.
Yeah.
Mam prasanna. Jana kaschit, even one time.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anything else on the lady's side? Okay. Thank you. All glories to the Prabhupada.